Hello and welcome to Check It Out, Comrade. I'm Nick Lauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this is an indie game podcast where every other week we bring you two games that we think are worth your time. This week we're doing Don't Starve and Shadowrun Returns.
Absolutely. We're going to start out with Don't Starve, which is a kind of a adventure action crafting open world game by Klee.
Yeah.
Entertainment. Yeah. It's released, it's on computer, it's going to come to PlayStation 4, but I played it on PC.
Yep, as well.
Yeah, so what's cool about Don't Starve, Nick?
So, Don't Starve is basically, like, the way I try and explain it to people to get them to play it, because I actually do really enjoy this game, is it's a lot like the first night of Minecraft, but forever. The gameplay is very similar, aside from being a 2D game instead of 3D. It's highly emphasized on collecting resources and crafting, but with a much higher emphasis on survival.
Yes.
Whereas with Minecraft, the actual...
You don't have to eat in Minecraft.
Yeah, that's true.
So...
And the actual element of, trying to keep yourself away from the baddies or whatnot is pretty much, negligible after your first couple nights of collecting stuff and building. This game is that forever.
Yeah. Well, and add that timer to it. So, because like Minecraft, you can just build four walls around yourself and then walk away from your computer forever.
Yeah.
And never, you'll never lose the game.
Right.
But this, adds that timer, so there's pressure. So all the decisions you'd be making in the first day of Minecraft, you're making with kind of a risk reward in place. So it adds a little bit of gaminess to it as opposed to being Legos,
Right. And there's more to, there's like other elements too that you can get yourself to a point where you're pretty self-reliant as far as food goes. You don't have to go, gathering, carrots out of the ground every night. Mm-hmm. You can actually build farm plots and stuff if you've kind of got this perfect situation, which isn't easy to come by. But if you manage to get that situated, you still have to make considerations for the upcoming winter, where you need to make sure you have the right amount of clothing and heat. And there's always an additional element of trying to keep yourself alive. Mm-hmm. The game gets increasingly more antagonistic. Like, there's these dogs that just start coming after a certain point on a certain interval. I forget what it is, but certain interval of nights, there'll be enemies that come out of the darkness after you.
Yes. Yeah. And sanity as well.
Yeah. You need to keep your sanity up. Which I'm not sure. I don't think I've gotten far enough in the game to know if there's a item you can make that actually kind of gets you an actual net positive insanity.
Like, yeah, I think it's just a counter. I think it just, because you can have a permanent boost based on clothing.
Yeah.
That's how they mechanize clothing in the game. So it's not just Team Fortress hats.
Yeah, and you can slow your fall.
Yeah, but you never climb.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's you walk around, you're picking up ingredients to build things and then resources. And it's a randomly generated world. It's kind of got a perspective a little bit like Toe Jam and Earl.
Yeah.
This kind of cutaway land masses that float, and this really kind of the sketchy Edward Gorey kind of style drawing. Like, your exact, the proportions aren't Edward Gorey, but the drawing style is a little bit scratchy.
That scratchy pencil, and
yeah,
it's a very neat art style that I think lends itself well to it trying to add that creep factor.
I like the way it looks a lot. I did not like the way it was written. Like, I wish the item descriptions were a little bit like funnier or more interesting or sadder or something. And then the Simlish that he speaks, like, that he does when he comments on something I didn't like. But I like the way it looks a whole lot.
Yeah.
And the music is good too.
Music is pretty good.
Yeah. So it's very difficult. Like, I had, and it's also, since it's randomized, your success is going to be very determined, by like what biome you get. When you create a world. And that was kind of my initial problem with it, is that, and I really do like this game. I'm going to spend some more time with it. Is that there's a gate resource, which is gold, that isn't that hard to get, but on the furthest I made it into the game, which is about 10 days, somewhere between like 8 and 10 days, I didn't find gold until the end. And for some reason, they have this one item that is what you need to make an inventing machine or a science machine.
Yeah.
Which unlocks the rest of your unlocks. So if I wasn't slowly going insane, I felt like I could just, you know, gather around a campfire indefinitely.
Right.
And keep looking for this thing. But in that biome, gold was incredibly rare.
Yeah, that and gold can be needed further too. So even if you come across, you know, one or two to make the science machine, you still have to try and find yourself a sort of bigger
a supply
stash pile of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's in my my reference to there being ways of being self-reliant for food and stuff. You also need to find a biome with the beefalo, the big, you know, oxen animals.
Yeah.
And so if you kind of can't find good resources of both of those, it makes it way harder on yourself.
And the frustrating thing is it's harder, and I'm not going to say it's impossible because I'm sure people have done who are better players at it than me and know more of the game than me, because it's a real knowledge equating to skill mm-hmm. kind of thing, which, you know, comes up in like Binding of Isaac and any of these games that do this. Just knowing what you can make and what to look for is really how you get good at the game. There's a time investment before knowing that you're kind of fucked. That was frustrating, especially when you're starting out and it's hard to, I mean, I eventually figured out like ways to try to optimize my downtime, but since the game has a steady clock that's always marching forward, you can't always be active.
Right.
So the first couple times, like I had a couple very fun, like tense nights where I was feeding a dying fire overnight, trying to keep the boogeyman away or what have you. Mm-hmm. But I also, during, you know, my longer runs, when I was looking for this one key resource, got frustrated by those times, because if I wasn't, you know, if I didn't camp out by a forest to let me chop logs, which is not the most fun thing to do anyway.
Right.
You know, I'm just kind of moving time into the future in a game that's fated to go nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't get immediate feedback that you're kind of fucked. Like it takes a while to discover.
Yeah. It kind of takes, a lot of the roguelike elements that are coming up a lot in these games that we're talking about, actually, and takes it that one step further where your starting situation is so random that, like you said, you could be pretty much fucked right off the bat.
Yeah. Which, like, contrasting that with, like, something like Isaac, where, like, yes, you can have a bad treasure room for the first couple, but you're likely to get something decent.
Yeah, it's before really too hard long. To be quite as boned in Isaac yeah. as it is here.
And you can get, you know, three levels into Isaac pretty quick.
Yeah.
Whereas Don't Starve, there's a set limiter on how fast you
how
can
fast
explore.
The game is, yeah.
Yeah.
So in regards to that, I tend to restart a lot in trying to make for a perfect start, basically. Mm. Which, like you said, may just be because I'm not all that good at the game. You know, I'm still fairly new to it. I've put in, you know, a decent bit of hours into it, but I haven't gone exploring all the wiki and stuff because I like the element of discovering that yourself.
That's my favorite thing about it too, was recapturing that. And I keep saying Isaac just because it's the roguelike game that I've spent the most time with.
Right.
But my most fun when I was playing Isaac was when I didn't know what anything did, and discovering it was really fun. And this game does that for sure. Like that is, I think, the central hook of the game, other than the challenge is just like figuring stuff out. Like, oh, this monster behaves this way. Oh, I can get this resource from this thing. And that was really fun. And that's what's going to keep me, you know, is going to get me to give it more chances, despite the fact that I was a little frustrated with it.
And it does that way better than, say, Minecraft does.
Yes.
Which, you know, there's a lot of fun to be had with that in Minecraft as well, but it's a lot easier to give up and seek out the wiki in Minecraft, because recipes and such, you know, crafting stuff, it tends to be completely blind in Minecraft.
Yes.
At least I haven't played in a while, so to be fair, it might be different nowadays, but that's not the case in Don't Starve.
And Minecraft never got its hooks into me. The times I've had fun playing Minecraft has just been with people.
Yes.
So it's like, that's what, I don't think Minecraft single player is very fun unless you just want to play with Legos.
Right.
You know, or you just want to make the perfect whatever, which is fine, but that doesn't really work for me. So this not being, even though multiplayer Don't Starve would be badass.
That's
you'd have to choose between splitting up, and you could gather around a fire and put one person on food duty and one person on, you know, materials duty and stuff. That'd be really cool. It'd skew the difficulty curve, but it'd be real fun.
It's worth noting in regards to that, because I've never heard anything about there being any multiplayer coming up, but this game receives very regular patches and updates with lots of content.
Yeah.
Being behind a few versions of this game can mean quite a bit. So
yeah.
Worth getting into now.
Yep. And the other thing I would just want to mention of is that we don't have a spoiler space for this, but I'm I know, I feel like there's definitely a indirect story that's being told here. Like, yeah. You're there for a reason. There's more to it that I have not seen.
I've picked up tiny, like, on my longest run, which admittedly was a few versions ago, but on my longest run, I think I started to pick up on a little bit of that. You're starting finding items that I think are linked back to that strange guy that pops up at the very beginning when you start a new run.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure, too, that there's a bigger story that you and I, as being pretty new to this game, haven't caught wind of.
Yeah.
Which makes me want to play it more, to be honest. So.
Me too. Like, I love indirect storytelling, and yeah. I love piecing together pieces of that. I mean, you know, I do a Dark Souls podcast. Like, that's right. You know,
I've been on that podcast.
Yeah. You've been. We're both big, huge Dark Souls fans, and that's you know, the story in that is that's how that's entirely told. So,
yeah.
Definitely, what I want to spend. You know, I'm not going to tell you to check it out. I need to check it out more than I have now. Unlike Prison Architect, which we did last game, where it's like, I get why this is good, but the systems are probably just not going to be for me.
Right.
Like, I like the idea of it, but this is something that I've put down just momentarily, but want to pick back up because
yeah,
I really like it.
I'm definitely going to be putting more time into it. It's just that, like, if there feels like so much content to it, but the fact that it lends itself to the story, but the fact that it takes so much time investment to get up to that point. Because, you know, you could have 20 bad runs before you get that one where you started discovering that stuff.
Yeah.
Means that I'll have to keep setting it down and coming
You're
back.
You're always going to have to do those first couple days again. Like, yeah. I would love to see what's on the other side of winter, but that's going to take a set amount of time no matter how good I get at the game.
And I wouldn't want that. I don't think I necessarily want that to change. Like, I think that's part of how it tells its story. I don't want them to make it easier on behalf of me getting more of the story.
I don't want it to be easier. I wish that there was a way. I mean, I guess this would ruin it too. I wish there was a way to speed things up a little bit. If you know, to hand wave like the gathering nights when you just know, you know, like I want like a set of a macro where it's like, okay, no matter what the world is, I'm going to spend the first day getting logs, twigs, grass, and carrots.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, that would ruin it, and I understand why they don't do that. But that's what my base instinct wants.
I will say, did you ever get around to crafting the bedroll?
I did not make a bedroll.
The bedroll, I think it helps out your sanity a little bit, but it also, the main draw to it in the couple times that I've built it is that you can just skip the night.
Oh, well, that's what I want.
Yeah.
But you need gold to make it. So you have to get it on the vending machine. Right. So in my experience, you know, one out of every three games will have that. But I think I just had bad luck.
I think you've just had bad luck. There's entire biomes that are just rocks full of gold.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you just have to get the right run where you come across that.
Yep.
And also, if you haven't done it before, giving you tips on the podcast here, follow the roads because you walk a lot faster on them, so it'll give you a bigger spread of walking through biomes.
Yep. Yeah, I figured that out eventually. Cool. Like the kind of things I started doing is, you know, follow the roads, camp in forests so I can chop down trees overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I would do my gathering of those kind of materials. I feel like in the last run that I did before recording, which was just, you know, a few days ago, I did, you know, I felt pretty good, but I just couldn't find gold. The sanity effects, like what ultimately ended up killing me was pretty great. Like the, just being constantly stalked by a shadow that I could not affect.
Yeah.
Like I was pretty
into that.
The
sanity effects are really cool.
Yeah. I was pretty into that. Yeah. So, but yeah, I think that's it for Don't Starve.
Yeah.
Like
I agree.
I wanted to watch, like I want to see where it goes.
Totally, totally with your time. I think they're considering it a complete game at this point with, you know, enhancements being added.
Mm-hmm.
I know for a while it was considered an early access game, but I think it's a pretty full experience as it is.
Yep.
Definitely worth, you know, you don't need to sit on it if you want to check it out now.
As of the time of recording, it's on sale. It won't be at the time you're listening. But right. Christmas sale is probably still going on, so yes, it will be.
Yeah.
It will have gone through two sale cycles. In the life of this podcast.
I ended up picking it up for pretty cheap and already have gotten my money's worth, I feel.
Yep,
so.
Absolutely.
Okay. So Don't Starve. Get it.
Yep. Next.
Shadowrun Returns.
Absolutely. Yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, developed by Harebrain Schemes, an indie game that is the real first of the big RPG Kickstarters to come through.
Yeah, and being a backer of pretty much most of those, if not all of them. I'm really glad that this game, one, came out at all.
Yes.
And two, came out good. Like, I'm a pretty big fan of this game. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it Yeah, it's real fun. It is a top down, like isometric tactical RPG. You know, the exploration is done just like a, you know, you're free to walk around and talk to people and do dialogue and such. And then in combat, it turns into a grid-based kind of Final Fantasy Tactics style thing in the Shadowrun universe, which I'm, you know, historically on the record, like we've done all the Shadowrun games more or less for Watch Out for Fireballs. Like I'm a big fan of this world.
We've played a Shadowrun game tabletop. That you GM'd.
Yeah, we did a tabletop Shadowrun game, which is a clunky system, but a really great world.
Yeah, which, you know, this is based on the latest system with some throwbacks to older versions in it. But luckily, you don't have to do any of the dice rolls and calculations, so that takes a lot of the pain out of it.
Yeah, and you can see kind of some of this is a weakness of the game, despite the fact that I really love the game, is that some of the things they simplified for the game, and it lost a little bit. Like, there's no astral plane, and the matrix sequences are much simplified and kind of few and far between in the game.
Yeah, I kind of wish they went with their newer tabletop version of the
Yeah, have you read very much about 5th edition, like the brand new one?
I don't know much about the brand new one either, but I think, wasn't it starting with 4th that they had the overlaid matrix?
Yeah,
where...
that's the version we played with the metaphors that overlay on your eyes. I like if role-playing game books weren't like $60, I would buy 5th edition.
Right.
Even though when we were at PAX, there was a Brony version of it.
Oh, God,
I saw that. So that was unfortunate.
That is unfortunate.
It was unfortunate. But so the thing about like Shadowrun Returns is like it is a modest product. Like it's $15 to $20. Like I backed it for just enough to get the game. And that's what it is. It's like a 15-hour, really good RPG. It's not being a Skyrim, it's not trying to do anything like that. It's just a really solid tactical combat RPG,
Yeah, it's one downfall I would say in that it's, limiting of itself is they also took the route of wanting to tell a longer, cohesive linear story.
Yes.
Which from my CRPGs, I expect a little more non-linearity than this game provides.
Me too. Yeah, it's very linear. Like your dialogue choices and such matter to the degree that you get to see different kind of flavor. That's important. Like I don't want to discount that because that's true behind the scenes of a lot of CRPGs. They give maybe the illusion of more difference, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter as much as they want you to think. But there aren't like necessarily branching paths. Now, to be fair, what they did was they said, okay, we got our stretch goal for this expansion, this kind of second game. A lot of this Promise the Moon stuff we're going to do in that second game, but we want to get a game out and get the player base working on stuff. So we're going to put this out now in, a little bit like a B+ form rather than a mastered form, continue to iterate on it, and then give you some of this stuff that we talked about later, which is like a weird inversion of what Double Fine's doing with the Double Fine Adventure, where they're eventually going to put out half the game in order to fund the second half of the game.
Yeah, that one's definitely a big mess.
It's a real shit
this.
Show.
But yeah, for anyone not familiar with how they pitched it in the Kickstarter, they wanted to do sort of an Icewind Dale style, a Neverwinter Nights style game where, yes, there's a game to play, but the main sort of pull is these editing tools where you can craft your own maps and your own story.
Mm-hmm.
And that was meant to be the main draw. And that plays really well into the mechanics of Shadowrun as far as a like tabletop game goes, is they're meant to be, these separate jobs you get.
Finite missions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what they're hoping the player base will create.
They're working on.
Which they're working on, yeah. The game's been out for, 4 months now? Came out in July, so 3 months as the time of recording this. And that hasn't quite come together.
No.
And I'll fault a little bit of that, I feel, to the tools not being totally full-featured yet. But they actually have come out with some patches that have added functionality and stuff to the map editor, too. So they definitely have it. Completely dumped it and started working on the Berlin campaign that got stretch gold. They are still helping the people who want to create maps have the resources to do so.
Right. And I'm eagerly awaiting that stuff.
Me
and
too.
I can be patient. Like I'm okay with this being a perpetual kind of engine that there'll be mods for, you know, like little user created things. And eventually the developers will start some kind of ranking system and recognize individual ones that they think are excellent. You know, like it's just, it's kind of the promise of, you know, really, it's not, it's like you're choosing the lottery payout that gives you 10 grand a month rather than getting the $1 million double fine adventure that you only get once and maybe never.
And you know, it's really easy to sort of forget about games in the like immediate return after they're released. Mm-hmm. And I think the Berlin campaign is going to really help keep the fan-made community going in time for them there to be that establishment of people who can actually make good stuff and get them ranked and, you know, highlight the great ones, like you said.
Yeah, that's really what I want. They did an iOS version too. Like, as much as this kind of game plays really well with a touchscreen, like a tactical RPG, mm-hmm. and that's only going to help. Like, they're still working on some bugs with it. I haven't played it on iOS because I just have an iPhone. I don't want to play on a screen quite that small.
Yeah,
but on iPad,
Android
I bet
as well,
it plays.
Actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was new. I think that came out afterwards, but that's also out. That's going to help tons because this game, like these tactical games, Final Fantasy Tactics and such, play so good on the go. Just doing, you know, a mission or a battle on the bus. Is really excellent. And I just see like good things for these guys. I knew it when you talked about seeing that stupid Brony version. We had a really positive Shadowrun Returns experience at PAX as well, where they weren't on an assigned panel, but they put together one of the empty rooms and said, we want to do like just kind of a backers meeting. Like, we want to show you what we have so far, your questions and stuff with Weissman.
You're right
there, and that was
cool. We haven't noted yet. I'm gonna interject real quick. Weissman also created the tabletop Shadowrun game forever ago. So this isn't just some company who likes the IP and has made a game. This is Weissman himself, the man who is Shadowrun, making a game.
Yep. And made was consulted on the other Shadowruns that are very faithful, the early ones that I really like. He wasn't doing games at that time. But he was very involved at that point. So he did kind of like a real high transparency with this. Like, the updates were at a very good pace. We're all very clear. He's just like, I feel like he's never gotten ahead of himself. Like, it's always just been like, this is what we can do. This is what we can't do. Here's what we have, you know. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah,
you know, like
too.
Kickstarter's like lent this degree of transparency to some of these things, but some of the experiences that we're having with them are not, not as kind of idealized, as maybe
it
seemed.
You know, you say that, but that's really only been true of Double Fine, in my experience.
That's mostly true of Double Fine. It's true of all of them for being well beyond their deadlines, so like way past like their estimations. Which, like, it's fine. I'm willing to give them the shot, but like, it kind of speaks to like just like kind of a bloat, you know. And that's like like a feature bloat's like a developer term. Like, you know, if you have more time, you're just going to add more things because you want to do neat things. It's not it doesn't come from a negative space. However,
and most of them acknowledge that before ever even finishing the Kickstarter, saying, if you give us more money, we're going to need more time to make use of that money to make more game.
Yeah.
So. I don't feel anyone aside from Double Fine again, which I like the company, not to badmouth them. Like, we've met Tim and whatnot. Like, they're not bad people, but they're making a mess of this Kickstarter thing.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I'm mildly frustrated about Wasteland because I feel like that's the next one that's coming up. Like, they're doing good jobs, but they're the next one that's as far beyond what it needs to do. And I think they're supposed to have a beta by now.
That could be.
Yeah, they were like, we're not going to make our deadline, but we're going to have something you can play, and it was, you know, and I could be wrong with that.
But I could be wrong as well, but at the very least, they've provided much more regular backer updates.
Yeah,
they've had quite a bit of content to them.
Yeah.
So,
and I'm excited to play all of them. Yeah.
Project Eternity has been like ridiculous on the amount of updates they've been providing.
More than
like
I've
had to ignore the emails because I want, you know, I want to play the game a little bit blind.
And I don't care about these, like, these church orders and, like, what, like, these different families of dwarves and shit.
But,
like, there's no context. Like, I'm not going to read the novelization of your
John Sawyer's a little nerdy about his own stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm way into this. Like, I really like this game. You know, and it's, the, you know, it's a nice callback to the type of game I like. If you like this kind of thing, it's also like a really niche kind of product. Like this kind of RPG is not not for everybody.
No.
And is really out of style right now, which is the great thing about the CRPG Kickstarter boom. Is like all of the games I love. Like if you love Fallout and Baldur's Gate, do we have like the couple of years for you, because we love them too.
Yeah. Which we haven't stated yet. If you like Baldur's Gate and Fallout.
Yeah, specifically like this, Fallout, like the turn-based.
This is very Fallout. And, you know, besides being ultra-linear, as we said, but, like, as far as gameplay goes, Fallout, modern, put into a futuristic cyberpunk setting is pretty good description of if you want to check this out or not. If that sounds good to you, you should probably check this game out.
A little closer to, like, a Fallout Tactics, just because of, like, cover and prone positions and stuff, but, like...
And also in that it's mostly battle-oriented.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a decent amount of story stuff that goes on. Like, the plot itself, like, I don't know, now that we're talking about it, I don't know that we need to do a spoiler space, because, like, the actual plot is not super gripping, but there are enough, like, I was interested in the plot, especially as a fan of the source material. Like, it touches on one of the coolest, like, fictional elements.
Yeah, which is kind of why I think we should have a spoiler section. Yeah. I want to hear sort of your touchings on that, and also the callbacks to the original too.
Yeah, we can definitely do that. Let's do that now, though. Let's put a pin in this and wrap it
up. Okay. So pin in this.
Ratings and reviews.
Yes, please give us ratings and reviews. Also, suggestions.
Yes, suggestions. Tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Yep, if you like it, and check out the rest of the shows on the network.
Yeah, lots of good stuff on duckfeed.tv. So. Yep.
And stop listening if you have not played Shadowrun Returns.
Yes. Here's a little ditty for you. All right. Welcome back. If you've played Shadowrun Returns, please stick with us. If not, turn off your podcast listener thing now.
Mm-hmm. Turn off your Zunes.
Turn off your Zunes.
Turn off your Zune.
This is the spoiler section.
Zune.dels. We don't put this podcast out on a .del file for nothing. dude, you're getting Dell.
All right. So yeah. A little bit of spoilery stuff about Shadowrun Returns.
Mm-hmm.
So mostly, like I said before, I didn't play the Genesis and SNES ones, but I know you have, and actually fairly recently for Fireballs.
Yep, last couple of years.
So one of the main things they pitched in the Kickstarter was that they would bring back some of the characters from those games. I know that those two characters were Jake Artemidge and
Joshua.
Or Joshua, yeah.
Yep.
And what's the clowny?
Harlequin.
Yeah, Harlequin.
Yeah.
So I know of them, but yes. I don't know. How did you feel as a fan of the original two? Did those tie-ins go?
It was initially Harlequin is a Shadowrun staple. Like that's he's in all the source books and stuff. But he is the cameo from the Genesis version. Like Joshua doesn't show up in this. And they didn't actually take very much from the Genesis version, which makes a sense because the Genesis Shadowrun game, which I maintain is one of like the most ambitious 16-bit games I've ever played, is really plot light and is like an open world RPG. Like you can speed run it really quickly, but you just have a bunch of goals and you can do it whatever order you want. And the game is just getting powerful enough to do them. So it is an incredibly ambitious open world, like 16-bit game. But the plot itself is pretty bare bones. Harlequin does show up in it, and he's kind of like just a mover and shaker, you know, behind the scenes, mystical entity guy.
Which plays out pretty well with how they
put
in this one.
He's shit in combat, which I was surprised by. Like, I was expecting him to be a much better fighter. Because as like a Shadowrun fan, like having him on your team, like was a real oh shit kind of thing. Like he's in the fiction and in the modules and stuff that I'd read, like he's the guy who shows up and says something really mysterious and badass and then like leaves, you know? And I was like, oh wait, you know, all right, he's going to kick some ass. And he only kind of kicks some ass.
Yeah. I kind of didn't like his class,
the
Street Samurai or the Adept. Yeah. I didn't like the Adept play style in this game very much anyway.
No, they need to work on that. They didn't do Deckers quite right, and they didn't do Adepts quite right. I think they did Shamans amazingly. I think that the Shaman mechanic of there being a chance of losing control based on how many actions you take is better than the tabletop version. which is it's much more cool, complicated.
Yeah. It's pretty fun. And just the regular gunplay and anybody who's gun-oriented, it works perfect. Like, if they got that wrong, it probably sink the game.
It wouldn't be a very good game. Jake was cool, too, because in the SNES version, he's like a silent protagonist, more or less. You start out with amnesia in the game, and you kind of learn a little bit about what you did, but you don't have a personality. And this game picking up years afterwards where you kind of become a person is neat. And he's one of the better developed characters in the game, I think.
Yeah. He's pretty cool, except like his kind of mysterious comings and goings, which are kind of sudden and not really well written. But
he's just like a friend of the dude, like the murder mystery dude. Like, he's not attached to you, I think, is the idea. So he shows up in the beginning, which like just introduce him, and then he shows up at the funeral, which makes sense.
Yeah,
you know, the coolest thing, like my favorite part about it, is that they did deal with these insect shaman things, which like. Well, my favorite, when I was playing the game, like I played Shadowrun, the tabletop game in high school, but I didn't have, we played a lot of D&D. We didn't play that much Shadowrun. So I had a lot of the source books that I would just kind of read.
Right.
And the Chicago source book, in the Shadowrun universe, like Chicago is just taken over by these things. There's just a wall around it.
You've told our group about this quite a bit when we were playing. And that sounded really crazy and interesting.
Yeah, it's extra dimensional as fuck. Like, it's super Lovecrafty. Like, just, you know, there's always these bug things around, but they can get into our world in some ways. And once they do, it's bad news because they're here to colonize us the same way that, like, you know, termites might colonize a house.
And they'll do it through the corporations that that own the world as it is.
Yep. And in Shadowrun Returns, they do it through, like, more or less a religion.
Yeah.
Which is super cool.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And if you do it right, the like actual gameplay elements that they have where they're, you know, unkillable without the weapon you receive at the end is done pretty well in my opinion too.
Yeah.
It requires you to kind of divide and conquer because they'll respawn in one turn if you don't kill them with the special gun in their, you know, extra dimensional form.
Yeah, it puts your guy with the special gun, like one, it takes him away from you. So you have to, he's probably your most powerful member and you have to figure out how to get by without him. And two, puts everyone else on protect him duty, which is like the best, decking situations, which only happen a couple times here, are similar to that.
Yeah.
Where like, you know, the decker is actually has a threat against him and people are forced to help him while he shuts down a door or something like that.
Yeah.
Even though that didn't come up very often.
No. And when it did, it was a little poorly paced.
It's poorly paced and it's bland looking. And stuff. It's really similar to the Super Nintendo one, actually. I wish they would have, I mean, the Genesis one is a straight up like turn-based RPG.
Mm-hmm.
When you go into the Matrix, that looks really, you know, cyberpunky, like cheesy cyberpunk, and looks really cool.
Sweet.
That would have been the way I would have liked to do that rather than just like a bland version of the actual game. Or maybe, the overlays.
Maybe some modder will come up with a really cool version of the Matrix.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be great. And then the other big part of the plot, I guess, is this the serial killer part, which I think worked on its own pretty well, but didn't tie into the main plot as well as I wanted it to.
There was a little bit of a disconnect there, but
yeah. But pretty neat, and it promises a lot of things. So like the end of it, you know, you've met all these kind of movers and shakers, you know, who are kind of fucking you around. Like one of the themes in Shadowrun is that like you're always being used. You can't trust anyone. Like, you have no allies. Like, it's a really dark, dark world. And that definitely plays out in the game.
Yeah. Everyone's pretty, like, direct about that in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like, well, you perform this service for us. You know, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And
here's a pat on the head.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's a pat on the head and some money you can't play because the game is over. You know.
And actually, I think either I missed something or, like, was the whole, the dead man switch, like the money that you were supposed to receive that kind of started the whole story off, was that all ruse?
Yeah, your buddy had no money.
Yeah,
that's like he just tricked you into avenging his death because he's a shitheel.
Which is a pretty fun twist.
Like, and his Shadowrun is hell. Like, yeah, it's, you know, there's no, you're never gonna win. You're just gonna lose less, which is like what I want in a tabletop game. It's why I love Call of Cthulhu so much. Like, you can lose less. But it also, you know, you're going to go to Berlin, you meet a guy who is a, emissary from, dragons, like dragons are these crazy powerful things in Shadowrun who is based there. So, you know, you're going to have interactions with him. So it promises like a kind of a grander scale, and there's so much to the universe that has not been explored. Like they did the insect spirits, which is one of my favorite things, but there's this whole thing about corporate culture. Like when they, you can like lease your bodies to corporations for when after you're dead, and they just put cyberware into you until you don't have any essence, and you just become these kind of like, you know, screaming drone things that are just like collections of, you know, essentially androids. And like, there's a lot, it's really rich, like,
yeah. I think after Chicago comes out, you and I need to play with the editor a bit.
Yeah. I've been meaning to do that.
Like you have a pretty rich experience with the setting, and I know my way around a map editor usually.
I have a really good there's a one of the modules I have from second edition Shadowrun is like one of my favorite stories, and it would be a cool way to do something that had combat but had a little bit less of it. Like if you wanted to try something that was more dialogue based,
yeah,
it's like a real like a kind of a cool quiet story. It was also like one of the reasons why I love Shadowrun so much is that was the first role playing game that even tried to do that. Like all the Dungeons and Dragons mules I'd read were just like go to Goblin Mountain and kill Goblin till get gold, you know, and that was essentially it. Like sometimes there'd be a plot twist, but there was never any room for kind of shade. And the story that's called Divided Assets, and it's a kid. Or a dad gets extracted from his corporation, which is essentially a corporate kidnapping. Like, you know, you work for us now, and you essentially indenture servant somebody. And, he stays with it, and he's like super traumatized by it. And his mom's a real shit heel. And, this kid ends up getting in the way. Like you go get the mom or do something. And the kid, like, you know, stows away with you. So you have this kid and you think it's part of your mission, but it's not. So you are waiting for someone to come pick you up and tell you what to do with the kid. And the kid is like damaged as fuck. And like, like the idea that you could do a role-playing game like that was just like awesome to me.
Yeah.
Like we're not shooting. Like we're trying to, like there's stakes that are not just, you know, life or death. Like it's actually like an innocent's life, you know?
It's pretty neat.
Yeah. It's super cool. Like that would be real fun. Somebody should do a Divided Assets mod if I don't and we don't.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
Anyway. All right. Yeah.
I think that's about all there is.
Yeah, so join us next time for games that we haven't decided yet. But if you have suggestions, send them our way.
Yeah.
And thanks for listening. Yeah, thank you for listening.
Bye.